The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but
we
because
have main
they are
start.
Hard.
4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Sunday Space Show program. Great to be here. Thank you all for tuning in. And welcome to the first day of daylight savings time. Did you all enjoy losing an hour of sleep last night? Anyway, we are happy to be here and very happy to have Dr. Gil Levin as our guest again. Let me run through a couple of announcements. For those of you who would like to call the program and talk to our guest, that toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. I will let you know when I open the toll-free line. Right now it's closed down, and I'll open it shortly. We'll allow Dr. Levin to go forward with what he wants to talk about, and then we'll open the lines for your call. Email, of course, is drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And that is our website, thespaceshow.com, so please do visit it. There's a detailed newsletter that is in the middle of the page. You can't miss it. And I will upload it after our Sunday program today. And then that has all of the information about the programs in the coming week. And it has all sorts of other great information in it, including it's the only place where there's a future events section for the show. Okay, and if we have to change our schedule, we do change that schedule first on the website newsletter, and then we usually will send out a note on the email newsletter as well. And so do check it out. And also on our website, you've got every show that we've done archived. You can easily download the program, or you can just, listen to them on the fly off of the website. There's a store up near the top, Space Show Gear. The important button there is Support the Space Show. Remember, we're a 501c3 nonprofit with OneGiantLeapFoundation.org. And we exist and can do these programs and bring all of this to you because of your support. And we definitely appreciate it. And if you do have any questions, check us out at OneGiantLeapFoundation.org or send me an email to drspace@thespaceshow.com. Guest search is also on our website next to the social media buttons. Here is a listing of all of our programs plus keywords. Most of the shows have keywords on them. And you can do a search like you can in Word or Excel or a PDF document for your favorite term, your favorite guest. And then when you find all the shows that match your search criteria, you can then go pull them up chronologically by the Space Show search engine, which is at the bottom of our homepage. Do remember also that we are trademarked and copyrighted. Excuse me. And you're free to download these shows and share them and pass them around. Very few restrictions, but please don't do anything commercial with the shows. And don't edit them, for example, a private YouTube channel or something of that nature. And written transcripts are not permitted, even if they're for your own use. Podcasting comes to us through Andrew Grummet over at gigadial.net. Our RSS URL is on our website, both of our newsletters. If you have any podcasting questions, please do email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. Finally, do remember that we are brought to you in part by the Secure World Foundation. The Secure World Foundation promotes cooperative solutions for space security. For more information, do visit their own website, www.swfound.org. They also promote and sponsor our webinar series. So I'm very happy to bring back to the program today Dr. Gil Levin. So his bio is very extensive. It's on the website in many, many places. But he did the Viking labeled release experiments on the two Viking missions that went to Mars. Many, including Dr. Levin, believe that life on Mars was confirmed. This has become controversial with NASA. Many wonder why it's that controversial. And we're going to talk to Dr. Levin about some new information on these experiments, why repeat experiments are not being done, and what the conclusion is about these experiments that were done on Viking. He was also the subject of a couple of recent TV shows that we will talk about. Gil, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Thanks. Very good, David. Good to talk to you.
Okay. What's new with Viking all these years later? And by the way, you told me something when we were talking before the show that was never clear to me. When you were the head of the labeled release experiments, you were never part of NASA. You've always been an independent contractor, right?
That's correct. I performed the experiment under contract from NASA to the company that I founded and ran, Biospherics Incorporated.
Okay, so that's different than actually being part of NASA or a NASA PI, correct?
That's correct. I was a PI. I was the experimenter appointed by NASA, but I was never a NASA employee.
Does that make a difference to NASA?
Well, it could. It depends. You know, maybe part of the problem over all these years is that NASA's searching on its own, hoping one of its own will discover life on Mars, rather than have some small company gain that recognition.
How do you keep getting new information on the labeled release experiment? I mean, God, it's been, what, almost four decades since you did it?
Yes. Well, I keep watching all the news and reading the journals about life on Mars and life in extreme environments on Earth and the possibility now rising of life on all these new Earth-like planets that are being seen throughout the universe. So that plus new reports appearing in scientific journals, I myself write at least one paper a year updating the situation. So the thing is an evolving history.
And you're convinced that your experiments confirmed life on Mars now or life on Mars sometime in the past or both?
It took me 10 years of examining the Viking data that I obtained on Mars and of reviewing all the other data pouring in from subsequent landers on Mars, from orbiters around Mars, and from the discovery of life on Earth, before I concluded that as a scientist, it was my duty to report my conclusion, and it was now, 10 years after Viking, that Viking had indeed detected living microorganisms on current Mars.
And do you get any support whatsoever from people at NASA, or are you really out in left field as far as NASA is concerned?
Well, some NASA people have told me privately they think it could be correct. And as I'll indicate later on, even Chris McKay, NASA's Mr. Mars, on this TV show with me, said, surprisingly, I might be correct. But over the years, gradually, scientists in the field have come to support me. I suppose there are now 25 scientists who have publicly declared that I detected life on Mars with my co-experimenter, Patricia Ann Stratt, who helped me for 10 years. And there are perhaps an equal number that say it's possible. But the consensus remains unconvinced. And the consensus really is what NASA dictates, that we have, quote, no evidence for life on Mars, which I find rather outlandish. The evidence is very strong. They would have to admit the positive results of the experiment are evidence. They may say they're not proof, but evidence, to say there's no evidence, is really bad science.
What were the two TV shows that you recently did?
I was on the History Channel 2 on a show called Ancient Aliens. Unfortunately, 90% of the show was consumed in all kinds of speculation about chariots of fire and all this mythology. But I did get to do two things on the few minutes that they saved of my hours of taping. I did, for the first time, say what I now believe, that NASA knows there is microbial life on Mars, but doesn't want the news out, for some reason unclear to me. And secondly, I did get to state my case very simply and clearly to millions of listeners who probably had not heard of it before.
I did see that show, and yeah, 90% of the programming was mythology. That's a kind way to say it. So we can leave it at that. But you did have some good airtime, and they didn't put on the cutting room floor some of your stronger statements. I was surprised at that. So. At least you did get your message out, that is for sure. So what is it going to take, Gil, to get some kind of confirmation of microbial life on Mars, either now or in our past history?
Well, I'm afraid that, as I stated, they know, they've confirmed it one way or another, or the evidence that has been coming together. It's just... bulletproof. They don't want to say it for some reason. I fear that it's probably going to be confirmed by the Chinese or the Indians, not by us. We're going to let go of this tremendous lead that we had in the space program and biology, as we've done in every other aspect of our space program. We're becoming a third world nation in space.
Do you... Well, India has a probe going to Mars right now, so I don't know its capability for detecting life. China, of course, hasn't gone there yet. Have they done any confirming experiments to the labeled release? Has Curiosity done some of the experiments that I think maybe could at least lend credible support to your conclusions?
Curiosity was very careful to announce, even before launch, that it carried no direct life detection experiments. NASA has proclaimed that edict in approving experiments ever since Viking. It has deliberately not sent any experiment back to Mars to confirm or deny the labeled release experiment. Very puzzling, because science is all about repeating an experiment that gives a result and then amplifying that experiment. I have proposed both to NASA many, many times. Each time, it's been rejected.
Is Curiosity capable of doing anything to help confirm labeled release?
Well, my predictions about Curiosity, which I published before its launch, were, one, it would confirm the presence of liquid water in the Martian soil, and I have shown in publications that Viking, back in 1976, proved that there's liquid water in the Martian soil. Indeed, Curiosity has now confirmed this. And they published a graph showing water vapor coming off of a soil sample as they heated it. They commented that the water vapor streaming off at the higher temperatures meant that there were hydrated minerals on Mars. But they neglected to point out their own graph showing a lot of water vapor streaming off the sample just as it was heated above freezing That could only come from liquid water that had been ice in the soil. And once the temperature came to above the freezing point, it melted and the water vapor came out. And everyone now acknowledges that the soil of Mars at Vikings 2 landing sites and at Pathfinder and Curiosity rises above the freezing point. So the fact that there's liquid water in the soil can't be contended. I was in a panel back in August in San Diego where a principal investigator of Curiosity participated, and I challenged him there. I said, look at your own graph there. You just put it up. That proves there's liquid water in the soil. And he looked at the lower extremity, and he said, well, yes, but it's probably in the form of brine, or it's absorbed onto soil particles. Well, microorganisms love that. They thrive in brine. They get their liquid from absorbed moisture on soil. So, you know, there was no case against life on Mars. Now, the second prediction that I made was Curiosity's liquid extraction method for analyzing organic compounds in the soil would find complex organics in the soil. NASA assures me that after a year and a half on Mars, they have not run that experiment. That astounds me.
So if something happens to Curiosity, then it goes bye-bye without ever having run this important experiment.
Yes. I pointed out in my frustration in a request for information that I submitted to NASA that it's possible that the spacecraft could be destroyed or communications with it could be interrupted, and we might never get that experiment. And I pointed out that with Viking, as soon as we got down safely, we ran our experiment for that very reason. We were worried. You know, anything can happen to a spacecraft on Mars. Let's run the experiment at least initially and get a result. We did. And it's an amusing coincidence. NASA says they're waiting to find a more propitious spot to run the experiment because they have only 9 cups and can run the experiment only 9 times. Surprisingly, Viking, the LR experiment, had only 9 chambers and could only run 9 experiments. Yet we ran the first one as absolutely soon as we could. And I don't know why they don't do that with Curiosity. If I were captain of that Titanic now on Curiosity, fearing it might sink before I got a result, I'd run the thing immediately.
Interesting that they haven't done that. You have a caller on hold. Hello, caller. Who are you? Where are you?
This is Rick Sterling, Dave.
Okay.
How are you today?
Fine, and you?
Oh, pretty good. Dr. Levine, how are you today?
Okay, fine. Hi, Rick.
Good to talk to you again. I just wanted to mention this one couple articles that I had sent you and Dave a few weeks ago. In April 16th, 2012, America Space published an article called Life on Mars, a Historic Reality, NASA Gears for New Emphasis, and it starts out with a statement, in a major strategy change, NASA managers say they are anxious to consider direct life detection experiments for new low-cost Mars landers that could result from a wholesale Mars program replanning effort now underway. And then they say later, but now the NASA Mars team is also more open to specific life detection efforts with Curiosity, openly characterized as such by Doug McKiston, director of the Mars Exploration Program at NASA headquarters. The rover is equipped with sensors to detect methane, et cetera, et cetera. But then it says, but now Curiosity will more specifically use that. They're talking a lot of, let me go back to that and read it again. The rover is already equipped with sensors to detect methane gas that could be given off by microorganisms. but it will also use the magnifying lens on the end of its arm to take color pictures of features as tiny as 12.5 microns, smaller than the width of human hair. That has always been characterized as a geology tool, but now Curiosity will more specifically use that capability to look for lichen-type growths on or beneath rocks, the same features that Dr. Gil Levine, who designed and led the Viking labeled release experiment, believes he saw on Mars rocks at the Viking landing site. And it mentions that the head of the Associate Administrator for Space Science, the Associate Administrator for Human Exploration and Operations Directorate, the chief scientist and the chief technologist are supporting this effort to examine the soil and the rocks on Mars for lichen-type growths. What I can't get over, Dr. Levine, is that they made these comments in April 2012, and yet they claim now and have been claiming for months or for, you know, over a year or so that they haven't taken these pictures. I just don't buy it. To me, they must have taken the pictures. Their own statements, their own policy was to take the pictures, and their own policy, which they enunciated in this article in writing, you know, the top officials at NASA are basically backing up your views that there could be lichen-like growths on the rock. So if they're claiming through their Freedom of Information request that they didn't take these pictures, and yet they themselves, in other words, the top brass of NASA, are saying in April 2012 that they were going to take the pictures, my question is, where are the pictures?
Well, that is my question. That was in my FOIA. And also, I spoke directly with Mike Malin, whom I know, who is the creator of the hand lens camera and is in charge of all the imaging. And I sent him my paper from 1981, I think, about the colored spots that looked like lichen on rocks on Mars. He said, we are aware of it, and we will absolutely take those pictures. But he hasn't, and my frequent calls and emails to him since have gone unanswered.
Well, to me, when NASA is interviewed, and there was another article on Discovery.com at the same day, and it quotes Dr. Grumsfeld, who was a NASA astronaut, Associate Administrator for Space Science, where he says, wouldn't it be grand if the Mars Science Lab images something or looks at something in Gale Crater and gives us a stronger indication along those lines, Grumsfeld said, referring to Mars' suitability for life. And then he says up here, Dr. Grumsfeld, he says, quote, there is reasonable thinking there could be life on Mars today. In other words, again, they're talking about taking photographs of possible lichen there. I mean, it's obvious to me that NASA at that point had a policy to take these photographs and obviously to release them and to look at them and to see if there were any indications of life on the rocks, lichen-type growths. So I don't know whether there was a change of policy after that point or why they made these public comments, but the fact remains these statements by the top brass, the top officials of NASA, are on record. They're in public documents. This is not, you know, some top secret release. This is public statements made by the top officials, two associate administrators, et cetera, of NASA, saying that they were going to do a detailed analysis of these rocks to see if the lichen-like growths that we all generally believe are there, and then, you know, basically release that information about life on Mars to the public. So, you know, I don't know what you can do. The only thing I can think of is have the public contact Congress and NASA, the top officials of Congress, you know, Senator Bill Nelson, other Congressman Frank Wolf, Congressman Lamar Smith, et cetera, and the public can get their contact information on the web at, you know, www.house.gov or www.senate.gov, and have them, you know, put pressure on NASA to release it, and also contact the public, have the public contact NASA to get them to release this information. And I think they should mention the statements made by the top officials of NASA in April 2012, where they themselves are basically supporting the idea of doing this experiment, taking these photographs, and seeing what's there. So I'm not quoting anybody but NASA itself. This is NASA's own comment.
Gil, any comments on this?
Well, I just focuses that the real question is, why won't NASA release information? That's even more difficult to answer than is there life on Mars?
Are there any new missions or anything that you're aware of that are planned by any country for life detection experiments?
The mission launched by India is an orbiter, as you point out.
Right.
But it has the capability, they say, to detect methane. And they're going to look for methane, which on Earth largely comes from living beings, microorganisms, cattle, etc. But NASA has already fended off against that, even when it announced the detection of methane. It promptly said it could come from volcanoes or from being frozen in ice that then melts. So it's explaining away the significance of methane, even if it's found.
Well, Rick, do you have anything else?
Just to wish Dr. Levine the best. You know, I've said for years and years and years that he's way ahead of his time, and you know, he is right on the ball here, Dave. I consider him to be the premier astrobiologist on Earth. There isn't anybody that knows more about this subject than Gil Levine. And, you know, you can take it to the bank. Anything he says is the scholarship that he prepares his data and analyzes it is excellent. There isn't anybody better than him. And it's just astounding to me that NASA would make these public comments that they were going to take these pictures and study them and determine whether Dr. Gil Levine was right, and I believe definitely he is right, and then not do it. I mean, at least not release the pictures.
Well, they did it.
In my opinion, the data indicates with these statements, these public statements by the top brass at the NASA headquarters verify that the pictures were taken. Now, the only question is, why weren't they released? That's the only thing I can say.
Well, we won't get to the bottom of that on this show, but it's a good question to ask.
I'd like to point out something else from the second TV show, which was March 6. It was on the Science Channel, entitled Are We Alone? Again, it was a freaky show with all kinds of terrible mythology about life elsewhere, but it did give me a few minutes, and it featured Chris McKay, who was practically the maitre d'. Chris astonished me after all these years of opposing my conclusion by saying, you know, Gil Levin might be right about life on Mars. That was a major movement for Chris, and I greatly appreciate that. But towards the end of the program, summing up, while he said that, he said, however, the evidence is not conclusive. And over the years, I frequently asked him and other critics of the LR experiment, what specifically does he object to? What scientific points in the experiment are questioned? And he nor they have ever answered that. They come in with generalities such as, well, the consensus of scientists is against the experiment. Of course, anything new always has the consensus against it, or it wouldn't be new. So that doesn't hold. But then he has said there's no liquid water on Mars and therefore no life, contended that for years. But now curiosity has confirmed that Viking did detect liquid water on Mars, and it is there, and in quantities much greater than in Death Valley, where the sand is teeming with microorganisms. So next, he and they claim there's a strong oxidant covering the surface of Mars, preventing life and destroying organic matter. Well, now he acknowledges that there's no such strong oxidant, and that the tiny quantity of perchlorate they did find on Mars could be the source of food for microorganisms as it is on Earth. He has then said the radiation on Mars is too severe for life, but recent scientific reports have shown the levels of radiation on Mars wouldn't preclude the survival of a number of species of life on Earth. So you know, we've even found microorganisms living in the core of nuclear reactors. Like all the critics, they will not, he will not comment on the specific problem he doesn't believe in the LR experiment. And that greatly puzzles me. It's hard to fight against somebody who won't tell you what they really object to in your experiment. And this experiment, the LR, is not just a casual experiment. It is based on an experiment or test method used by public health laboratories all over the world. And we just souped it up using radioactive nutrients. We ran it thousands of times on Earth, and it was never wrong. It never produced a false positive. It never produced a false negative. So to contend, as they do, that it works on Earth, no one has contended it doesn't work on Earth, but not on Mars, would mean that the laws of chemistry on Mars must be different from the laws of chemistry on Earth. And that's, you know, something that flies right in the face of science.
Yeah, nobody has ever said that. I ask that question all the time, if the laws of physics and science are the same on Mars and elsewhere as here on Earth. And I've never had anybody say, no, they're different. So
yep,
I agree. Rick, I'm going to clear the line unless you have something else. Okay.
Nice talking to you.
Listeners, the line is cleared. It is toll-free 1-866-687-7223. I have an email question from Sally in Eugene, Oregon. And Sally says, I understand that there were two Viking missions that went to Mars, but what is the labeled release experiment? I'm 21 years old. I really don't know what it is. But since that's what you're talking about, can you describe your experiment? Was it on both Vikings at the two different Viking locations? And were both Viking locations giving you the same information?
The answer to both questions is yes. There were two Viking landers and two orbiters. And the landers landed 4,000 miles apart. And both gave positive results for life on Mars, and both gave negative results for the confirmation that the initial responses were biology, not chemistry. Now, the experiment was quite simple. It took some nutrient foods known to be used by common microorganisms all over Earth and labeled them with carbon-14. Thus, when the microorganisms would consume the food, they would breathe out, if they're anything like terrestrial microorganisms, gas, but now this gas would be radioactive and very easily detected. That's what happened at both sites. The gas came out and was monitored for 7 days. And this is a monitoring, I contend, of metabolism. It's not a snapshot of is there an organic compound in the soil, which really can't prove anything. But here is radioactive gas being evolved by presumably microorganisms in the soil eating it and metabolizing it. Now, the control test, if we got a positive, which we did, was to take a duplicate sample of that soil that gave the positive, heat it to a temperature that would kill microorganisms, at least as we know them on Earth, but not destroy any chemicals that could interfere. And in each of those tests, the controls were negative. This confirmed that the first responses were biological, and that was all that NASA required before the mission to accept as proof of life on Mars. But they promptly objected. And what we did then was modify the control. And in the end, we showed that all you had to do was take that Martian soil, which was positive, hold it in the dark for 2 months, and it was suddenly dead. It gave no response. And it's hard to imagine a chemical which just held in a box in the dark for 2 months after working on Mars would suddenly be dead or suddenly inactive. So it's very difficult to explain away the science of the experiment. But it's easy to say we don't believe the result because most people don't believe it.
Pretty interesting. So when I have interviewed people from NASA and academia about experiments to confirm life on Mars, they say they have to be extremely cautionary. This is a huge, huge deal. They don't want to get into some kind of a contest like they did with the Martian meteorite during the Clinton administration. And they just have to be overwhelmingly cautious and sure, and they don't have that level of confidence or data yet for whatever has been done on Mars so far to say, yes, there is life on Mars.
My response is this experiment works fine on Earth. As I said, it's used by public health departments in testing water, foods for microbial contamination. Why would it not work on Mars?
Well, they approved it for Viking. I mean, you were a contractor, but they had to select it and approve it, right?
It was selected over many contenders, yes.
So they must have thought it was a sound experiment to send to Mars.
Sure, they saw it operate many times. They came out, I demonstrated it. We went all over the country to Death Valley, to Salton Sea, to White Mountain. We got samples sent from all over the world, and they saw. They accompanied us on our trips around. They saw that it worked every time.
So it was flawless. It never had a failure.
Never had a failure.
Interesting.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And it's amazing that it's become so controversial all these years.
Yes. It's amazing that no one of all the critics has ever criticized the experiment itself or said there's something wrong. They just criticize the interpretation of the result.
Do other people on your team that are still around, do they concur with your conclusions?
Dr. Patricia Stratt, my co-experimenter, who was with me for 10 years during the development and the operation of the experiment, concurs completely. She's equally frustrated.
Where is she now?
She's retired, lives in Maryland near Washington, D.C.
When you do science, this also comes up all the time with climate science, climate change, for example, where they say the majority of scientists agree, you know, that global warming exists or climate change exists or the consensus exists. But when you do the scientific method, you've got an experiment that shows some data. What you want to do is repeat that experiment to see if it can be repeated and if you get the same kind of results. It's not really a consensus. It's can you repeat the experiment? What does the data show? Am I off here? Am I missing something?
You're exactly right. They're missing something. Let me tell you about how much prejudice there is against repeating this experiment. I've offered to repeat it at least 10 times to NASA. One time, our laboratory was very close to Washington. I proposed the experiment, and to make sure I met the deadline, which was several days away, I had our courier take the proposal to NASA headquarters and deliver it personally. Before he got back to our lab, a cab arrived depositing the proposal with a big note on it, rejected. He sent it back by cab.
They didn't have a chance to read it, Gil.
Nope. But they had told me all along, no life detection experiments can be flown to Mars.
Why?
I wish I knew.
I mean, that's what everybody wants. That's what we're all waiting for.
Yep. They say it's the paramount question in their panorama of science.
China, you need to get ready to go to Mars.
Yep.
Which is really sad, isn't it?
It is.
Here, I got another question for email for you. This gentleman is in Sweden, and he can't call in, unfortunately. So this is from Bijan in Sweden. What is your view on how NASA handles mission risk today compared with the Viking landers in the 70s? Are they moving the MSL rover too slowly in order to avoid making even modest, risky decisions? Is there a change in the NASA culture, or is it explained by, for example, increased complexity and sensitivity?
I am perplexed by the NASA programs since Viking. Viking was an extraordinary mission. It got more science data than any mission since. But what concerns me is that most of the missions since have merely sought to repeat and confirm what Viking found, and they always announce it as a new discovery. A new discovery, for example, that there was ancient water on Mars. Viking clearly showed that, including that there's current water on Mars. They announce so many things that Viking had already detected that I'm confused as to why they don't move the program forward. Instead, they spent billions of dollars, as you recall, on the mantra, search for water. The hunt for water is the hunt for life. And they went on with missions looking for ancient evidence of water, not current. Currently, they're looking for evidence of ancient habitat for life, and they have announced publicly that Curiosity has exceeded its mission already. It has confirmed that there were ancient habitats for life. Well, what's different now? Why don't they say it's confirmed that presently Mars is a habitat for life? I don't understand it. I am concerned about the design of the Curiosity vehicle, that those wheels should be so fragile. I've looked at the images of the holes in the wheels. They look very serious, and they're driving the vehicle backwards now, hoping that that will somehow prevent rocks from getting into and expanding those holes, which could destroy the mobility of the vehicle. So I'm puzzled. To answer the question specifically, I'm puzzled at the timidity of the program in moving the science forward. I'm puzzled that they spend so much money repeating what Viking has found, but utterly astonished that in that repetition they do not include the search for life while still contending it's paramount in their program.
You know, years ago, I mean, maybe 20 plus 25 years ago, somebody gave me a coffee table book, you know, these big things full of pictures, of pictures taken from Mars way back when, you know, earlier on. And there were frozen water spouts and things that were there that you could see and other water-related objects in these pictures. I mean, I guess these pictures were made in the 70s and 80s. So, you know, I've always wondered, look, if I've got these pictures from a long, long time ago in a coffee table book, and I forget who some of the analysts was, but they're real famous names. If I heard them again, I'd probably remember them. Then why is it all of a sudden so startling that we can confirm water on Mars? I've got pictures of waterfalls. I'm not kidding you. Frozen ice and waterfalls on Mars in this coffee table book.
Yep, yep. Well, what is also confounding is why the scientific press picks up these news releases from NASA and just runs them without doing any research to show that all this is old hat and was known before. this is very disturbing and makes me worry that perhaps these science journalists are too worried about losing their source of information, NASA, if they don't accept what NASA says or question it.
Probably kind of like journalists covering politics and stuff, too. If they don't repeat a party line, then they maybe don't get a chance to interview again.
Yep.
Same kind of thing. We need to take our break, but John in Montana sent in his hypothesis on all of this. Current scientific culture is influenced by current social culture, and anything older than 3 years and communicated via anything other than electronic media is ignored by many scientists.
Yeah, could well be.
We're going to take a pause. So, everybody, we're at the halfway point for our show today, and we'll be back in 3 minutes. Our phone number, if you would like to talk to Professor Levin, 1-866-687-7223. Be right back.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
David Livingston, creator and host of the Space Show, and I would like to share my vision with you for not only this radio program, but for space development. Space should be like any other place we choose to visit, work in, or call our home. It should be just another destination, like Tahiti, Hawaii, or any place available to us right now on Earth. When this vision becomes reality, we will be spacefaring in our culture, our economy, our society, and in our lives. Our world will be vastly improved by countless space-related benefits, transforming our lives both in space and right here on Earth. And the Space Show is helping to make this vision a global reality.
Welcome back, everybody. Part two of our Sunday Space Show with Professor Gil Levin of the famous Viking-labeled release experiments. We have a caller on hold, but first, following up from what we did last segment, Gil, sample return mission, would that be needed to prove what you're talking about?
Well, I really don't think it could. Look, on Mars, the sample held in a box for just 2 months lost all its activity. So if it were chemical, it lost its activity. If it were biological, it died. Now, to get a sample from Mars to Earth will take a minimum of 6 months, probably 9 months, much longer than the period over which the activity in the soil would cease. So when it got to Earth and you looked at it, if you saw microbial forms in there, you wouldn't know whether they had been alive when you took them off of Mars or whether they'd been dead for thousands of years. So you would not answer the question of, is there living life on Mars? Now, there's another reason not to return a sample to Earth. We don't know what life on Mars might be like. It could be pathogenic to life on Earth, to something, either to humans or animals or vegetation, something in the environment. And to risk exposing the Earth to that just exceeds any possible benefit, because the consequences of that risk are so great. And there is an organization headed up by my friend Barry DeGregorio to oppose any return Mars sample. He heads up a group that has made every effort possible to prevent returning a sample from the standpoint of public and environmental health. And I think it makes good sense. NASA says they're going to return it in a capsule so secure that it won't leak out. But they said the same thing about the moon rocks, and they leaked out. And the chance is always there that there will be leakage. So in a study I performed under contract to NASA long ago on a return Mars sample mission, I pointed all this out, and my recommendation was first to do a robotic experiment on Mars, duplicating or amending the labeled release experiment to see whether something alive is up there, and then in returning that sample, not to return it to Earth, but to return it to the moon or to an orbiting space station where it could be examined by scientists. And I was surprised when NASA said, well, you can't do that. Suppose there is something pathogenic, you wouldn't be able to bring those scientists back to Earth. I said, that's correct. That's the reason for not bringing the sample to Earth in the first place. So that is my opinion. Number one, it wouldn't scientifically solve the issue of life on Mars. And secondly, there is some hazard involved. We now know that Earth and Mars have been exchanging debris for billions of years when each is hit by comets or meteorites. Some of the material eventually winds up on the other planet, and this could include living microorganisms, so that you might say, well, the same organisms are probably present on Earth and Mars. Well, you might think that, but on the other hand, the environmental conditions are sufficiently different that organisms on Mars, even if they started off from Earth, may have evolved to be pathogenic to life on Earth, just as various episodes have occurred on Earth when supposedly innocent items provoked epidemics. So I don't think the return Mars sample is the trick.
Okay, and you have a caller on hold, John from Fort Worth. So hi, John. Welcome back to the show.
That's what happens on the show. You call in and things get more advanced while you're waiting. I think maybe you've sort of answered your own question of why NASA's doing what it's doing then. Let's look at it this way. Let's say that NASA confirms what you're saying and said, yeah, well, now it's kind of late. They're going to look like conspiracy guys if they confirm, yeah, we knew back in 1976 that there was life on Mars and we've been holding it back all these years. But the question is, let's say that they actually know this. What impact does that have on their future programs? So it sounds to me like from what you're arguing, it's too dangerous to go forward with any... questions have been answered, and it's too far to go forward with anything really interesting to do. It sounds like manned Mars missions are out of the question. Return missions are out of the question, if we take your logic and accept your advice. So they're essentially shutting themselves down. So by not doing this, the bureaucracy can keep itself playing on marginal missions, like you're saying, and talking about a future human mission, which never actually happens for a variety of political and economic technical reasons. Just a thought.
Well, the private sectors are planning human missions.
Well, they may actually be able to out the system at some point. If they actually get the capability to really do it, we may have a government edict come down. Right now, they're probably banking that they won't succeed.
John, I think you make a good point. The only I've thought about it. The only contraindication would be that if NASA were to announce life on Mars, they would get tremendous funding. Because now, even though we might not be able to send men there, they could send lots of robots and try and analyze it, compare the life on Mars to life on Earth, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that's, I don't know, that's a possibility. Maybe they're, the human mission part of NASA is what's squelching it.
And that could
I'm just playing with your logic and kind of drawing some conclusions.
Now, the human mission is really a very important piece for NASA, and to cut that out would be very severe, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I have... Go ahead, John.
Well, this was kind of what I thought this might be leading to with your arguments. I'm still... I'll take a neutral position on what's true or not. The other issue, of course, that's been an issue in like science fiction and for a long time, is the issue of human life and moving into other biospheres or vice versa. You know, I've often critiqued since probably it was in junior high or freshman high school, the idea like, could humans really exist in an alien biosphere that wasn't like Mars, but was highly developed like Earth is, but yet alien, in short-sleeve environment? Because look what you'd be exposed to. That's all alien, right? I mean, every kind of microbe, enzyme, biochemical that's in a biosphere, you know.
I have another point of view for you, Gil, from another John, this one in Montana. Opposition to Mars sample return seems to follow the Andromeda strain theme, yet are not most terrestrial pathogens evolved into narrowly defined hosts, and wouldn't Mars pathogens also be evolved to suit their local host? Point that living microorganism exchange is valid. Gil?
Yeah, I think they would evolve to their host. And, of course, we've seen no evidence, for macroorganisms on Mars. So you might have something like viruses attacking microorganisms, and that might or might not be pathogenic on Earth, especially if those microorganisms on Earth and Mars have been exchanging visits.
Is there a test or an experiment that could be done to determine if there would be a problem bringing samples back from Mars to Earth?
Well, one of the experiments I repeatedly proposed to NASA for their rejection was called the chiral labeled release experiment. And many organic compounds have two formats called left-handed and right-handed because they're identical chemically, just like your two hands are identical physically. They really aren't the same. You can't put one on top of the other. The same for these organic compounds. They're not the same in their physical structure. Enzymes depend on physical structure of the molecules they react with. So, my proposal was to send separate experiments with the organic chemicals separated into the so-called left-handed and right-handed versions, and see to which the Martian organisms respond. On Earth, all life responds essentially only to left-handed amino acids and right-handed carbohydrates. I knew that at the time of Viking, and I had proposed to send two instruments for that purpose, but there was neither space, time, nor money to do that. So rather than take a chance on missing life on Mars, I included both shapes, left-handed and right-handed molecules of the compounds that I sent to Mars. So I don't know really from which handed compound, if any, that response came. But now, to go back to Mars, we could find out. And if the experiment showed that the Martian organisms use the same handedness as we on Earth do, there would be greater fear that they could be pathogenic and that we were related. If, on the other hand, they had a different handedness than we do, that would be astonishing. It would mean life originated on its own, differently from Earth life, either on Mars or from someplace else, but that our two life forms are different. And it would be less likely, although not necessarily impossible, for one form to infect the other. But it would be a great result, because it would prove, if the handedness were different, that life exists throughout the cosmos, because we'd have two examples of different life forms from two planets immediately adjacent. And the implication would be, there would be life throughout the cosmos.
John in Fort Worth, anything else?
Well, yeah. There are also other specific biochemical structures. I mean, the DNA and so forth, right? They're very specific. And one might assume that if it's truly alien, there would be some differences in the exact chemicals, the exact elements of the DNA and so forth, right?
Yes.
That's possible.
But the finding of DNA would not prove that there was or is life. You know, Occam's razor would be applied to that result. And to get to life, everything has to form and evolve. So, you know, you could argue, even if you found DNA, it could have been formed accidentally without biology as evolution eventually took it to a living form, which it would have to do. So just finding some complex organic compound is not going to be accepted as proof of life. That's why I think the LR result is so compelling. It didn't just identify an organic chemical. It identified ongoing metabolism, and that is very hard to refute.
Yeah. But I was saying, if you actually did confirm life, you wouldn't have to go so far as having different handedness to show that it was unique in some way if it was completely different in chemical structure than the DNA here. But
yes,
DNA-like, if you will, but I mean, but different.
Yeah, true, but it's very easy to do the paro-labeled release experiment, whereas finding and identifying the DNA would be tough. You know, Craig Venter has recently proposed the way to do life detection on Mars, not to return a sample, but to return the information, to send a spacecraft robot to Mars, take the sample, extract the DNA, and then send the DNA sequence by radio back to Earth, where it could be analyzed, or even the organism reassembled under very carefully controlled conditions. That's a very interesting possibility, but as of the moment, it's my understanding that the robot sent to Mars would have to be very large and complicated. And until that can be reduced to something simple, it's going to be a difficult experiment to run.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Anything else, John?
I think I'll clear a line for the next caller.
Thank you. Listeners, the toll-free line is available again if you would like to use it, 1-866-687-7223. So where do we stand today? Is it just sort of like in Never Never Land here? There's no action one way or the other?
Well, I do believe the evidence supporting the labeled releases claimed having detected life on Mars is so strong that now any objective panel of scientists, astrobiologists, biologists that examined it would concur. We're not alone. That examination, which should have been done, has not been done since 1976, right after the mission. And then all the prejudice was against life on Mars. So right now, the easiest thing to do, the least expensive thing to do, is to rescue that then $1 billion worth of data. Today, it's about $5 billion worth. To look at those data in the hard current light and determine whether or not it's sufficiently convincing to support my claim. I'd be very happy to make my presentation, along with Pat Strat helping me, about why we concluded there's life on Mars, and answer all the questions of any opposing witnesses the panel may choose to call. And I think done that way, you know, with maybe a month of effort, a report could result clarifying this issue. Why that isn't done, I don't know. Certainly that effort would develop many new guidelines for NASA to pursue.
Steve is in Denver, Colorado, and he said, is there any money to be made by NASA sitting on this information? That is, if we follow the money, is there money to follow in this whole matter?
Boy, I don't see it. I have jokingly stated that one of the good reasons to talk about life on Mars is that it may contain a better yeast that could make us a better beer. And that would make money. But I can't think of any money-making aspect of denying us the information.
It would seem that if NASA confirmed life, their budget would increase for a higher priority of Mars exploration unless we shied away from it.
No, I think so.
I don't know. If you ran labeled release on any other of the planets that are close in, you know, or anything, do you think you'd show up anything like Venus or Mercury, or what do you think would happen?
Venus or Mercury, there the environmental conditions really seem extreme for life as we know it, and for it to respond to the labeled release experiment. The labeled release experiment is based on life, something like terrestrial life. It's based on an aqueous biochemistry. It's based on biological molecules, something like ours. And that was deliberate because we couldn't imagine other kinds of life, such as silicon life, being as probable, and because of the proximity of the two planets. So we did that on purpose. There could be gaseous life on Venus, or some kind of life, solid life on Mercury that can withstand enormous
temperatures,
frames of temperature. I'd rather try and send the labeled release to Titan or other of the moons of some of the giant planets, where NASA says they've detected water and or methane.
Okay, so here's a question about that a listener has just sent in. This is from Chris in Phoenix, Arizona. And Chris says, why spend the money for future label release experiments anywhere in the solar system if there isn't any agreement and conclusions and settlement to the issues from the original labeled release on Mars? It just seems to me that it would be a total waste of money because nobody could believe anything that came out of the experiments, and NASA would probably adopt a similar position toward life on Europa or something as what they're doing to Mars. And so why bother?
I perfectly agree. That is a very good observation. You know, if you don't confirm what you have, why go elsewhere at much greater expense when you know it's not evidence is not going to be accepted?
Well, yeah, you either confirm or deny, or you know, show that it didn't find it. But to keep it in limbo and then have all of these statements that people make, kind of like the way Rick called in earlier in the show and stuff, and then to go nowhere with it just puts everything in limbo. So, yeah, why spend the money and why frustrate the PIs and the people who work on the teams, because they'll never see a conclusion to their experiments.
Right. Oh, I agree. Just the biggest question of all is the one you started with. How can you do an experiment that gives an exciting result and not go back to verify or deny it?
Well, I'm waiting for that answer, as you are. My hunch is they probably say there's other priorities for our mission. We'll eventually get to it, right?
No, I've asked them directly, and what they've said is that we took a terrible hit when we were unable to make a definite pronouncement about Viking's detection of life. If we were to send your experiment back, or any other experiment back, and we got another ambiguous response, we'd lose all credibility and we'd lose our budget. And I just think that's not science, that's politics.
Okay, so why do they have, so is an ambiguous result justified, or is it the result of being overly cautious or some other politics or policy involved? I guess the reality is if you're a pure scientist and you've got, you know, no political or policy constraints, and, you know, you're just in a total scientific world and you're operating in a scientific vacuum, are the results of labeled release ambiguous?
Well, there have been, I totaled them up a couple of years ago, 40 experiments and theories proposed to explain away the labeled release experiment. And these have included various oxidants on Mars, superoxidants, ultraviolet light, intense radiation, and so on. And of all of those, not one has withstood scientific scrutiny. So that as of the moment, no one can point to any specific environmental condition or material on Mars that would prevent the labeled release response from being factual. And that to me is a strong thing. And when I pointed that out one time, a critic said, well, you're trying to prove the positive by elimination, and you can't prove anything by elimination. Well, my response is that's not so. The hard proof I offer is the LR experiment itself, but I'm showing that in addition to that, no one has been able to come up with an alternative supportable explanation.
Jack in Syracuse, excuse me, New York, sent in you this email. Gil, given your present knowledge of all that has happened regarding labeled release since you first did Viking, if you got a chance to do it all over again with the benefit of all of this experience and wisdom, what would you do different?
I would send the chiral labeled release experiment. I've devised a way where the instrument could be made much smaller, even smaller than the one that went to with Viking. And I would look for a chirality in the response. Number one, any response would confirm the Viking response. And number two, a response could show that the life was different than life on Earth, and that would be a major scientific breakthrough.
Interesting. So you would send two experiments? You would send both the original labeled release and the chiral labeled release, or just the latter one?
The latter one. I would send the labeled release experiment to inject only the left-handed molecules into one set of samples and only the right-handed molecules into another set and see which gives responses. And if any gave a response and then the control was negative, that would confirm the Viking response. And then depending on the chirality which responded, that could tell whether the life was related to us or was different.
Here's another question from you, Sam, excuse me, in San Diego, California. And he says, how different would your results be if you landed at different places on Mars than where Viking landed and did the experiments?
Well, remember, Viking landed 4,000 miles apart, the two spacecraft. And one was in quite a frigid zone. The other was in, I guess, on Mars, which would approach a temperate zone. And all the spacecraft which have landed so far have this in common, which supports Viking. None has landed in a place where the atmospheric pressure is below the triple point of water. So the atmospheric pressure at each of these places could support liquid water, which we're now finding it does, because even Curiosity is reporting liquid water in the soil. And at each of these landings, they have found the surface temperature, at least on occasion, diurnally, to rise above freezing so that liquid water would be available. And this eliminates the major objections that had been raised against the Viking result.
Are you worn out and exhausted, or do you still have energy left to keep pushing for these experiments and for this confirmation?
Well, I do keep pushing. I am an adjunct prof at Arizona State University, and we have repeatedly sent proposals into NASA for novel ways to do the chiral labeled release experiment, but unsuccessful, of course. I do write papers at least annually updating the situation, and I am frustrated. That's why I sent in the requests for information, hoping that NASA would be forced to respond. And I was amazed at how rapidly they responded, but how vapidly also amazed me. So I really gained nothing but an increase in frustration. But the issue is so important that I'm going to keep pushing it as much as I can.
Okay, so let's talk about why the issue is so important. So if you look at present-day United States, there are a lot of really important issues that this country is struggling with today. And space is just kind of, you know, out there. Why is confirming life on Mars so important, either for the United States or for the world at large? I mean, honestly, there are so many huge problems that nations today are facing. One might have a hard time prioritizing life on Mars or any of the human spaceflight program or something.
Well, you might make that argument, but ever since man could think, he's always wondered where he came from. Is there life out there elsewhere? You know, the Greeks, thousands of years ago, first proposed panspermia, that life goes from planet to planet. We've always wondered who we are, and starting with thinking that we are the center of the universe, we have had to take blow after blow that we're not the center of the universe. To find out that there's life elsewhere might be another blow, but mankind wants to know. That's, I think, a distinguishing characteristic of our thought process, that we have an unquenchable desire to know what we came from. Hopefully that will help us theorize where we're going. I disagree. I think this ethereal concept is worth a major use of our resources, as opposed to some of the other things that we are using those resources for, which actually are destructive.
Well, boy, I agree with you on that. But do you, if life was confirmed on Mars, then would you make the assumption, the connection, that that life is somehow related to life on Earth?
Well, the chiral labeled release experiment would determine that, which is why I am so surprised NASA doesn't leap for it immediately. We would know whether life on Mars was related to life on Earth or not, and the implications of either response are great. If it's related to Earth, you know, we still don't have any evidence that there's life out there on any of those billions of planets. But if it's not related to Earth, that's strong indication that there's life all over the place. And even if there's just microbial life on most of those planets, certainly some of them are older than we are and would have evolved to having intelligent beings.
You have a note from Charles Pooley in Las Vegas, Nevada. As on Earth, there are hot springs heated geologically. Surely there is now warm places in the Mars soil. So I guess he's looking for a comment for you on that.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure that is so. But when NASA first did begin to think maybe there is life on Mars, they immediately said it would have to be meters beneath the surface to be protected from the radiation. It would have to be below the surface where there are warm oases that could harbor life. My response is, those people don't believe in Darwin. On Earth, you can't find a place other than magma, which is, so hot rocks are molten, where life doesn't exist. Life exists in clouds above in the atmosphere. It exists at the bottom of the ocean. It exists thousands of feet beneath the floor of the ocean. Every place we have looked, there is life, because, Darwin was right. And life has had the same opportunity to evolve into every niche on Mars. So I believe that any place you touch down on Mars, you're going to find life. That's why I'm impatient with curiosity stating they're looking for a better place before they test for organics.
It seems like they're always going to be looking for a better place, right? What are your plans for, say, the rest of the year? How do you work to accomplish this? It's strictly by doing papers and trying to get the word out, or?
Yeah, talk shows like yours help a lot.
Do you?
Especially that person on your show who didn't even know what Viking label release experiment was about. I think it's important to let those people know the youngsters are not prejudiced, and they're more likely than the oldsters to take an objective look.
And they're not well informed, so they probably, I'm surprised she even knew about Viking. The person who emailed in.
Yeah.
So what are your any more TV shows, for example?
Well, I haven't any. Yeah, I've got one more that's supposed to come out. That's right. There is one that I was taped. But I'm going to have to be more selective. I don't want to be taped for 2 hours and have them take 5 minutes out to actually show and leave what I think is the best stuff on the cutting room floor. So I haven't made any requests before agreeing to go on the show and granting it copyright. I think I'll have to be more selective and specific if I get opportunities in the future. I don't have to worry about your show because my past experience shows me that it really is a scientific show and that's what it's about. So I have no fear for it. But these TV shows that are based on fantasies and mythology bother me.
No, I don't typically cover those things, but they make a lot more money than I, so let's get real about it. that's for sure. Have you ever gotten a chance to go make a presentation at a high-level NASA meeting, like with Charlie Bolden, or to go before one of the committees of Congress that disperse funds to NASA to make a direct appeal for funding these missions?
No. I met with every NASA administrator until Golden. Golden refused to see me, and ever since then, I've been on NASA's bad boy list.
Really? They have such a list?
I don't know.
Okay, well, we're pretty much at the end of today's program. Do you, of all the things we've discussed, what do you think that we should take away, and what can we do if we're interested in confirming life on Mars? What can we do? I mean, there's a lot of frustrated people out here about our space program and about the fact that we've never really gone to Mars with humans and that we want to know if life is out there or not. What can we do?
I think there are two things. Number one is the simplest. Just demand that NASA or the National Academy of Science or the National Science Foundation or some such organization convene a panel of experts to examine the Viking LR data and the issue of life on Mars. I think that could be extremely productive. Secondly, demand that NASA send life detection experiments to Mars on the next mission.
Absolutely. So, and I guess that's just a campaign to your members of Congress and to people at NASA. An extensive campaign. Okay. Well, until the next time you're ready to give us some new information and updates, we'll look forward to talking to you again. I don't think this is at all the end of this. I think hopefully you'll have the energy and you'll be able to keep going.
Well, thank you very much, David. I really appreciate it.
Can I do something?
You and your guests.
Can I do something totally politically incorrect and ask you how old you are?
I will be 90 this April.
Wow. And how old were you when you did Viking?
Oh, boy. That was 50.
You were already 50 years old when you did.
Yeah. I had been working on it ever since I was 40. I spent 20 years on the total program, 10 years on the science effort funded by NASA each year because the experiment kept working. And then when NASA determined there would be a mission, a Viking mission, I spent another 10 years developing it and the instrument.
Well, you win the award for perseverance, I'll say that. You're doing great for 90. I hope when I get to be 90, I'm at half of your energy and ability to carry on a conversation and everything. Do you still drive a car?
Yes, I do.
Amazing. And you're in Tempe, right?
No, right now I'm in Goodyear. I go to Tempe to ASU on occasion as the adjunct professor. Meet with Paul Davies, whom I think is an amazing guy.
Yeah, I've had him on the show, too. Do you teach classes still? Do students rally around what you're talking about?
Oh, I do at Wheaton College by Skype. Once a year, I lecture on the labeled release issue to the astronomy class.
And I'm assuming the students are fascinated and really interested, right?
Yes, yes.
Gil, it's always an honor and a pleasure to talk to you, and I certainly look forward to more conversations, and we wish you a lot of luck in trying to keep pushing this forward. And listeners, if you want to get involved and do something, follow his advice and ask for these experiments to go to Mars, and let's see if we can't find out what's really there and what has really been found. Gil, again, thank you, and we'll talk to you down the road again, for sure.
Thank you very much. Very good.
Okay. Listeners, just a quick word about the coming week. There is no show on Tuesday, but Dr. Zubrin, speaking about Mars, will be on Thursday. So we've traded the Tuesday show this week for a Thursday show. So Monday, Thursday, Friday, and Sunday. Everybody have a great rest of the weekend and a good week coming up. Thanks to Dr. Gil Levin and all of you for making this show possible. And again, have a good week. Bye from the Space Show.